In 1975, Jaws was released. It is routinely regarded as one of the greatest films of all time, and is generally credited with creating the concept of the summer blockbuster. In 1978, in an obvious cash grab, Jaws 2 was released, failing to have lightning strike a second time, but presenting a generally enjoyable film. In 1983, Jaws 3D was released, shamelessly attempting to take advantage of a gullible audience. By 1987, there was no pretense of quality as Lorraine Gary and Michael Caine cashed paychecks for sleepwalking through a pointless and incredulous sequel. In 2016, Paul Spitero created Is It Jaws, in which he and a group of rotating guest hosts discuss new and old movies and place them up against the Jaws scale, which ignores some elements of the actual films and sets forth a rating scale. Jaws, an all-time great classic film. Jaws 2, an enjoyable film with some flaws but worthy of multiple viewings. Jaws 3, a moderately enjoyable film. And finally, Jaws 4, a bad movie. Please join Paul and his guests as they ask the ever-important question, is it Jaws?
Santa Claus conquers the Martians. Santa sets up a fantastic automatic toy factory on Mars. The Martian leader battles the wicked Voldar in a desperate effort to save Santa, the wise man of Mars. 900 years old. The Battle of the Toys, when Martian kids and Earth kids join Santa to battle the bad guys of Mars. Space age fun. You'll be out of this world when Santa Claus conquers the Martians.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Is It Jaws, the movie review show. I'm Paul Spitero, and Merry Christmas, everybody. I am joined by Blaine Dowler.
Thanks for having me back.
Oh, my pleasure. And Trey Hooks.
Thanks for having us on again, Paul.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And, if you're not aware, Blaine and Trey have a new podcast out. What is it, 99 Years, 100 Films? Is that the correct title?
That's it.
And focusing on Academy Award winners every year from now until they finish the series, which is just a big, tall order. But it's a labor of love as movie fans for all of us. And today, to try and get as far from that topic as possible, Blaine suggested our Christmas episode for this year. Blaine, I'm going to just give you the stage and say, why'd you pick this and what are you thinking?
So I picked Santa Claus Conquers the Martians because there are some movies that are so bad they accidentally entertain you. And this is one of them. So if you are the kind of movie viewer who can enjoy watching Plan 9 from Outer Space or Manos, the Hands of Fate, this is worth checking out. It is number 38 on the Internet Movie Database's 100 Worst Movies of All Time. And it actually used to be number 4. But as is the issue, a lot of things that hit that lowest rated list, people who love watching bad movies to laugh at, tend to start giving it 5-star ratings and it starts crawling up the ranks. So this is one that was introduced to in university by friends who also enjoyed the bad movies like Manos and Plan 9, and it has become an annual tradition for me. So, yeah, when I put out the call, And he has said before, he doesn't necessarily want everything to be Jaws. He wants some variety in the ratings. I figured that there's not a person on the planet who will call this Jaws. Although, when it comes time to the ratings, I think I can make a case that I could see two cases for someone rating this something other than Jaws 4.
Okay, well, I could see somebody rating it for something other than Jaws 4, but I'm not sure I see two cases. but we'll get there. Trey, what's your experience with this movie?
I know that I have seen at least clips from it before, having watched it for this podcast. I might have seen part of the Mystery Science Theater 3000 presentation. But I think this past week was the first time I saw the whole thing. But based on feedback you had given in previous shows, Paul, I've started posting what I'm watching on the Is It Jaws Facebook group. And when I posted that I was watching this film, the commiseration started rolling in.
Well, yeah. I hadn't seen this in years, and I'm finding that the more popular viewing choice on this one is to watch the Mystery Science Theater 3000 version of it over the regular feed. And this is something, as we've mentioned, that is available in the public domain. So you can watch this on YouTube, and you can watch the Mystery Science Theater version of it on YouTube. And in preparation for today, and I put the word preparation in hand quotes, I did watch both versions and found it to be fairly similar in both cases. I guess I should give the plot or give some background and the plot. This movie was released on November 14th, 1964. It's directed by Nicholas Webster, starring John Call, Leonard Hicks, Vincent Beck, Bill McCutcheon, Victor Stiles, Donna Conforti, Chris Month, and I just kept going down the list until I reached Pia Zadora, who's the most famous name in the bunch, who plays a young Martian child. And by famous, I think I'd have to put that in quotes, too. Other than her, I think Bill McCutcheon might be the only actor of any note where you might look at him and say, I recognize that guy from somewhere. But that's about it. And the plot is that the Martians, Momar, which is short for Mom Martian, and Kimar, which is short for King Martian, are worried that their children, Gimar, Girl Martian, and Bomar, Boy Martian, are watching too much Earth television, most notably station KID-TV's interview with Santa Claus in his workshop at Earth's North Pole, consulting the ancient 800-year-old Martian sage, Kochum, a Yiddish-Hebrew word meaning sage, though pronounced differently from the film's version. They are advised that the children of Mars are growing distracted due to the society's overly rigid structure. From infancy, all their education is fed into their brains through machines, and they are not allowed individuality or freedom of thought. Kochum notes that he had seen this coming for centuries and says that the only way to help the children is to allow them their freedom and be allowed to have fun. To do this, Mars needs a Santa Claus figure, like on Earth. Leaving Kochum's cave, the Martian leaders decide to abduct Santa Claus from Earth and bring him to Mars. The Martians cannot distinguish between all the fake Santas, so they kidnap two children to find the real one. Once this is accomplished, one Martian, Voldar, who strongly disagrees with the idea, repeatedly tries to kill Santa Claus along with the two kidnapped Earth children. He believes that Santa is corrupting the children of Mars and turning them away from Mars' original glory. When they arrive on Mars, Santa and the children build a factory to make toys for the Martian children. However, Voldar and his assistants, Stobo and Shim, sabotage the factory and change its programming so that it makes the toys incorrectly. Meanwhile, Droppo, Kimar's assistant, who has taken a great liking to Santa Claus and Christmas, puts on one of Santa's spare suits and starts acting like Santa Claus. He goes to the toy factory to make toys, but Voldar mistakes him for Santa and kidnaps him. When Santa and the children come back to the factory to make more toys, they discover that someone has tampered with the machines. Voldar and Stobo come back to the factory to make a deal with Kemar, but when they see the real Santa Claus, they realize that their plan has been foiled. Droppo, held hostage in a cave, tricks his guard, Shim, and escapes. Kemar then arrests Voldar, Stobo, and Shim. Santa notices that Droppo acts like him and says Droppo would make a good Martian Santa Claus. Kemar agrees and sends Santa and the children back to Earth. I feel like this would almost be a good 30-minute episode of some sitcom.
Yeah, I feel that the best way to make this actually good would to be if a more experienced TV executive had been in charge of it, and they made it about a 45-minute animated special that aired in a one-hour time slot.
Yeah, maybe by Rankin and Bass.
Yeah, that could have been an option. I don't think they had much option because Paul L. Jacobson, one of the producers, also wrote the short story it was based on.
Yeah, as a short children's cartoon, I think this could have had, you know, a better reception, and it would have been more slightly more polished than it is. It comes off as kind of a fan production almost in my watching of it. I'm sure the budget was exceedingly low.
About 200,000.
Yeah, which actually I guess by 1964 credit standards is not as low as you could go. I mean, I'm sure there were lower budget films out there at that time, but just the same, I really didn't find a lot to recommend about this movie. The Mystery Science Theater version did have some, you know, funny comments, some side comments to it. So if I was going to recommend one, I'd recommend that one over the traditional.
But I didn't find a lot to not like with it either. As you said, the story's actually pretty sound. I've heard a lot of people pick apart the special effects, but this would have been the second year of Doctor Who. I can live with second season Doctor Who special effects, so the special effects here didn't really bother me. The acting's not horrible. It's not great, but it's not horrible. It rises to the material. A Santa Claus who ho-hoed more than ha-ha'd probably would have been nice. Just based off of all of the, oh my God, I feel so sorry for you that I got, I thought that I was watching Plan 9's second cousin. But I didn't find this to be that. I cannot say that it was a great film. It doesn't have great performances. It doesn't have great production values. But it's inoffensive, and there are films that I walk away and I'm literally like, what did I just watch? Films that I would deem to be a bad movie, and I can't label this a bad movie.
Yeah, I could say it's poorly made. Part of the issue, I think, is it is definitely aimed for a very young audience. And if this had incredible production values, you still have a point where the Martian Voldar sees the Martian Droppo that he is very familiar with and sees on a regular basis and mistakes him for Santa Claus because he's got the Santa Claus suit, regardless of the fact that his skin is green and the antennas from his helmet are sticking out of the side. The fact that that's enough to be a mistake in editing this script tells you that they're writing for 4 and 5 year olds. That's the target audience, are the very young who are, you know, the audience is not even going to mistake the two. They know they're different people. It's crystal clear. But the audience who will accept that, oh yes, that change in outfit is enough for someone to have the mistaken identity. So that's a lot of it. And that's why I think it might be better accepted and it would have come out better had it been animated in the first place, because the vast majority of content aimed at a demographic that young is animated.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with your hypothesis that this would be better as an animated film. I don't agree with that. I don't disagree at all. I do think it would be better. And it probably does not belong on the worst films ever made list. But I would certainly think it's one of the worst, if not the worst, of 1964. You know, what you're doing, and I don't necessarily disagree, but what you're doing is you're setting the bar exceptionally low and saying it gets over that bar. But that said, it does get over that bar, and it does probably present an acceptable fantasy movie for 4 and 5 year olds of 1964. I don't think 4 and 5 year olds with the choices they have in 2019 would go for this necessarily.
I agree with that, Paul, and I'll be honest. My initial defense of this film was, well, let's look at where children's entertainment was in 1964. And then I went to Wikipedia and I started seeing films like Mary Poppins and Hey There, It's Yogi Bear. And I said, okay, well, maybe comparing it to contemporary children's entertainment is not such a great defense. I don't know if you've seen Snow White and the Three Stooges.
I got
the same feeling watching this film as watching Snow White and the Three Stooges, so I kind of gave it the same grade.
Well, Snow White and the Three Stooges, to me, I don't know if that we're ever going to discuss that film at any greater length than we are right now, but to me, that's almost got its biggest disappointment and its biggest plus is the fact that it's going to tug on your nostalgia for the Three Stooges. It's disappointing because it's not at the quality of comedy that you expect from the Three Stooges, but it's got nostalgia because, you know, this was that group basically wrapping up its time in the public consciousness. So there's a nostalgia element for me that makes it almost acceptable. But I'm not by any stretch of the imagination going to defend it as a quality film. And when you see, you know, Three Stooges with Curly or with Shemp, or even Joe Bessa, I don't think I really do feel that Joe DiRita was a step down from all of them. So, you know, for what it's worth, I'm not going to give too much credence to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, and just for the record, because I hadn't seen that, so while you were talking, I did a little advanced searching on the IMDb. According to the IMDb users, this is actually the fourth worst movie of 1964.
Oh, look at that.
So it comes in above The Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Zombies at number three.
Which I've never heard of before. Go ahead.
I've heard of it. Haven't seen it. The Starfighters is number two. And The Creeping Terror is apparently the worst of the year.
I'm pretty sure I've seen clips of The Creeping Terror.
Yeah.
And the, you know, that's, you know what, I was probably being a little flippant to even have made that comment, because the movies, you know, every year there's some really bad movies, and this one I think probably stood out because of the subject matter more so than those as far as in people's memories. I think I go to Siskel and Ebert used to do the worst movies of the year. They used to do their best movies of the year special, and they used to do their worst movies of the year. And when they would do the worst movies, they would say, we're not necessarily going to rate the absolute worst films, because that would entail us pulling out every bad movie that was made and trying to rate them against each other. What we're trying to do is to gauge the movie against the expectations. So when you start putting out movies about Santa Claus, your expectations even if only slightly, are raised over what they might be for the Creeping Terror or the other ones that you mentioned. So for that reason, I'm probably going to still rank it lower than them, even though I haven't seen them, and they may be ostensibly worse than this one.
Oh, I would, if someone says this is the most disappointing movie of 1964, they will get no arguments from me. Even if it's just because Santa Claus doesn't conquer the Martians.
Not only doesn't he conquer them, but Santa Claus is not really, like, they don't make any real effort to show the magic of Santa Claus about the, you know, the Santa Claus that, yeah, that kids grow up loving.
Yeah, the only hint of Santa's magic is when he helps them escape the airlock without getting blasted into space by going through a very tiny duct, so the airlock is clearly not airtight. But yeah, he's the least competent Santa Claus. He's scatterbrained. He's not inspirational. Like, Mrs. Claus seems to be the one that actually keeps the gears turning and makes sure things happen at the North Pole. And it's the kids that get kidnapped that save the day. And, you know, any step they take that gets them closer to going home is done by the kids until that very last moment when Santa says, you know, Droppa would make a good Santa. He was perfectly happy to start making toys for kids and blow off the Earth kids until they told him, oh, you're never going back. And then he's a little disappointed, but he doesn't take an active role in trying to get home until they need to do something at the end. He says, well, let Droppo take over.
And when I say the magic of Santa, just to clarify, I'm not necessarily talking about the magic of being able to cover the world in one night or get down through chimneys or anything like that. I'm talking about the magic of the wonderment that children have for Santa. And I don't think that's presented in any way in this. I don't think you walk away saying, of course, the people in Mars, the children in Mars, are going to be enraptured by the thought of this Santa Claus because look how wonderful it is. It's just like, okay, he's a guy who gives away toys who, as you said, is almost incompetent. And I think that's probably the biggest failure of the movie. I think if they had cast a Santa that was going to make children light up when they see him and have the story in a way where, you know, where Santa is this just wonderful character, I think then all the other shortcomings would have not been as bad.
Yeah, well, I was actually a little disappointed the first time I saw it, because when I heard the title Santa Claus Conquers the Martians, it sounded like the plot was going to start with Santa leaving Earth and heading to Mars to take over, which could have also been a fun movie, but much harder to justify. And there's not even the slightest hint of that.
Now I had first become aware of this well before the time, but when I hear Santa Claus Conquers the Martian, I'm getting the same vibe that I get when I first heard the term Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Yeah.
And I don't get that. I get it delivered to me in Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter. I don't get it delivered to me here.
Yeah, for Christmas movies, the most similar vibe I would get just from the title is Santa's Sleigh.
Was it in Scrooged where they have like a promo for a Santa Claus movie where Santa's like a gun carrying,
yes,
you know, crime fighting, you know, like Die Hard type character?
Lee Major comes and saves the day.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean that's in my mind, even as however old I was when I first became aware of this movie, that's what I'm picturing in my mind.
Okay. But you know, and you've mentioned this before on the show, Paul, you talked about expectations, and I think that's somewhat key. This is better than what all of the initial posts that came in before I pressed play led me to expect. I'll contrast it with my golden era growing up, excuse me, as a kid, was the 80s. And the Salkinds did a Santa Claus movie with John Lithgow and Dudley Moore.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. That got a big promotional push. McDonald toys. I think there was a Marvel graphic novel adaptation. and what I got from that film as a kid versus what I was led to believe I was going to get was so different. And I think the reverse is true here. What I got versus what I was warned I was going to get, I think, is different.
Okay. Well, I think, you know, you hit on a good point there. And I think Santa Claus the movie actually has a chance of maybe one day being covered on here. But just the fact of the way you described it, the fact that you mentioned John Lithgow and Dudley Moore, and David Huddleston, who played Santa Claus, isn't even mentioned, shows you the weakness of that movie, that ultimately Santa Claus isn't the main character in Santa Claus the movie. So, yeah, I totally get what you're saying on that, and where expectations can get just... You know, that they are going to affect your, you know, how you're going to take in the movie eventually. And the fact that you had heard so many negatives about this movie before watching it made it easier for you to see it as a positive than if you had gone in expecting it to be, let's not even say great entertainment, but just, you know, run-of-the-mill Christmas movie entertainment. I think, you know, you might have been more disappointed if you had expected that. So, ultimately, I guess expectations do rule the day in a lot of cases. But that's why a lot of times a second viewing is important on movies, because now you've tempered your expectations, you know exactly what you're getting, and you can watch it more with a critical eye towards what do they and don't they succeed in doing in the movie.
Let's talk about one of the movie's strengths, I think. What did you two think of Voldemar, the villain?
In its own way, I thought he almost felt like one of the villains in one of my favorite movies, March of the Wooden Soldiers. You know, very campy and silly, but I thought he was effective in his role.
Yeah, I was thinking he felt like some of the characters on Star Trek who are pining for the days of glory in the Klingon Empire. Right, where, you know, he wants the warlike race and he's not getting it. So he's one of the characters. Often movies aimed at people this young, the villain is evil because they enjoy being evil, and that's it. Whereas Voldar isn't completely evil. He's just saying, no, we shouldn't be soft and happy, and who cares if our kids are smiling? They need to grow up to be warriors. So I did appreciate the fact that his motives were more complex than one would expect from your typical movie of this caliber.
I think the other thing that I enjoyed, and I definitely don't think anyone was trying to be prescient when they made this movie, and Paul, you can tell me if it's always been this way, and I'm just looking at it through my lens because of having younger kids now, but we do live in a time to where it seems like a lot of families have very regimented lives for their children. We're not really in the era anymore of you come out home after school, you get together with your friends, and you go play. There's a lot more, okay, school ends at 3:30, you have soccer at this time, you have music at this time, you have chess at this time, to where they do have much more structured lives. And I know that there have been different debates about whether that's good or bad for children. So I did find that nugget of something relevant in it to today.
And I think that's an interesting thought. I think the structured nature of children's lives has developed, you know, over time, over the years. And I don't think you're necessarily mistaken on that. But I'm still not sure that it resonates with me from this movie. but I do think, you know, I certainly could appreciate your seeing it that way.
Yeah, to me, I would say the best element of this is probably the song that plays over the credits.
Oh, I found that to be saccharine-like.
Oh, yeah.
Hooray for Santa Claus.
Yeah. You spell it S-A-N-T-A-C-L-A-U-S. Hooray for Santa Claus.
Oh, please don't ever do that again.
I just found it humorous that they tell you to spell it one way and then they pronounce it a different way.
Yep, it's Santee instead of Santa. Hang up that mistletoe. Soon you'll hear ho, ho, ho. On Christmas Day, you'll wake up and you'll say, hooray for Santa Claus. At one point, I actually tried looking for that in the iTunes store to add to my Christmas playlist. There have been about 24 covers of that song that are available for purchase in the iTunes store.
It's almost frightening.
And Paul, you mentioned March of the Wooden Soldiers. The one spot where I was most disappointed in this film was the climax takedown of, is it Voldemar? Voldar, sorry.
Yeah.
Because we've seen that done better in the 30s.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if this had a more exciting ending to it, it might have lifted it up a little bit for me as well.
Yeah.
So I don't disagree with that. I guess, you know, that probably would have been out of their budget to try and have something a little, you know, that action packed, for lack of a better word. Right, any other points on this one that you boys would like to
No, I think I'm ready to rate if you guys are.
All right. Well, yep. Blaine, you're the one who brought this to our attention, for better or worse. So you go first.
All right. Yeah, as I said, I think there are two cases in which you might not rate this as a Jaws 4. If you are a peasant who's been ripped out of time, you're illiterate, you've never seen a movie, you've never heard radio, you've never seen a stage play, you've never read a book, the sheer spectacle of moving pictures might be enough to convince you to rate this as a Jaws 3. The more likely outcome is that the only other way that this is not a Jaws 4 is if we, you know, after seeing it, Paul decides, no, our scale needs a Jaws 5.
Oh, bravo. excellent. Where do you rate it?
I would say, in any objective sense, it's a Jaws 4. It's just at that point where it's so bad, I find it a very entertaining Jaws 4, but I'm not going to pretend it's a well-made movie in any respect.
Okay. How about you, Trey?
So the second year of our podcast may have a different co-host. Blaine may disown me after this, but to me a Jaws 4 is a I never want to watch that again, and I can't say that about this movie. It's a low Jaws 3, but it's a Jaws 3.
Okay. I was trying to figure out a way to justify not giving it a Jaws 4. And I think ultimately the only way I can do that is if you see it as a camp classic and that you laugh at it when you watch it as a tradition. But I don't think that's enough to save it. And I think objectively it's a Jaws 4 and that some people just enjoy Jaws 4 movies in some ways. But that's how
I can completely get behind that. I can completely get behind that.
Okay, so that will be it for our Christmas episode this year, guys. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Have a Merry Christmas. Have a happy holiday to everybody, no matter what holiday everybody celebrates. And we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for coming on again, guys. And just plug your show before we wrap up.
All right, so Trey and I are the co-hosts of 99 Years, 100 Films, which is part of the Bureau 42 Master audio feed. That's how you'll find it in your podcatchers. If you're on Apple iTunes, we've got them separated by season for which show that is. The promo's available now, and the first episode will drop on December 28th of 2019. And then the 28th of every month from that point on, Trey and I will go through each of the Academy Awards ceremonies, looking at what won Best Picture and what we feel should have won Best Picture, why it was there, and just sort of analyze what ostensibly are the best movies of every year that America's been making movies with the award ceremonies.
All right. I would strongly recommend that to everybody who's a fan of movies in general. Again, thank you all for listening, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.